You can get a little closer to it. It won't bite.
All right. Okay. I've never had anything this big and black in my face.
How about you, Rodrigo?
Close to my hell no, nah, dog. Okay.
How's your Thanksgiving, Rodrigo?
It was cool. It was fucking chill, dog. Copacetic, just fucking resting,
you didn't
dog.
Beat nobody up on your
nobody,
family?
No fights, no nothing. Just a bunch of heads down.
I went to the Laugh Factory, man, and I did the...
How was
the,
that, bro?
Oh, man. It's like... Bob Zaney was hosting.
Hang on.
Yeah, man. And it was like, you know, it's a homeless. It's like a bunch of homeless people there. People there are kind of crazy. And all the good comics, you know, they go up on Friday, you know, they're trying to run from going up on in front of the homeless people.
Oh, okay.
So, of course, I went up first. I did my material, you know, like did the homeless jokes. It's a lot, man. It's a lot of bad people in there, man. Like they want to eat.
They're so impatient.
Yeah, man. And then Jamie does a little speech. You know, oh, wow. We got Kevin Nealon. He's been coming here for 20 years, and I'm like, nah, I've been here the last 7, man. I've seen him twice.
Yeah, I've never seen him. Too
or then what's the name showed up? Roseanne's ex, Roseanne Barr. What's
Tom
her name?
Tom Arnold.
What's going on, guys?
He was there with his young wife and his baby, sober, bro. Like 5 years. I don't know how long he's been sober now. But it's funny. Like, I remember one time he was there. And then he goes, he was on set on the stage. He goes, wow, I didn't know I was going to be here till I woke up and read the paper this morning that I was going to be here.
Yeah, that's Tom Arnold.
And then Jay Masada, he's telling everybody, like, greeting everybody, hey, hello, how you doing? Come back, you know. People are asking.
He said that to the homeless people?
Everybody.
Come back
in 2 weeks. No, come back on Christmas.
Right. Come back what you've eaten.
So what's up, fool? It sounds kind of weird, but we're all right, huh? All right. It sounds like I'm far away. It sounds like, hello, hello, hello.
A little bit of a drink.
Is there anybody in there? Smile if you can hear me. Is there anyone home?
Sounds like Bill Cosby's career. Far away.
What's up, fool? We're here with Rodrigo Torres. And let me tell you, man, we have a very special... We always, everybody says that we have a guest this week. And let me tell you, he ain't special. He's an OG.
Yeah.
He's very special, actually.
Triple OG.
Triple OG. Man, I've known this guy since when I first started doing stand-up comedy. He was one of the first guys that would do my room for $50. And it was good. This guy would show up anytime I called him to do my room. And not only that, he used to wear the shiki and the lokes on BET's Comic View when he was the militant. And I've done many shows with him in the past. Mostly in Montebello, California, at my room.
Yeah.
Real nice guy, very knowledgeable about everything, about women, comedy, pussy. Not like other comedians that hang out, you know, bro. You know, bro, all these comedians, bro, all they think about is the pussy, bro. They don't care about writing. No, but this guy's a real writer. And he, this guy will tell me funny stories, man, about comedians he hung out with in the past. Like one story, man. Like I don't know, you and Dexter were talking, and you guys did a military gig, and it was lonely as fuck over there.
Right.
And then you guys both pretended. He said that you pretended to fall asleep. Then you went back to the E Club.
Right. Yeah, what happened was we were in the club, and we went back to this girl's room, and it was like the promoter, the girl and her girlfriend, and me and Juan. Me and Juan are trying to get at the one girl. So finally the promoter runs us off, so we're thinking, well, that must be your girl. He runs us off like, well, you guys need to go back to your room. So I pretended like, okay, well, I'll go back to my room. And so Juan went to his room. I went to mine and just looked at the door. It's like, okay, let me go back and get that chick. And it was snowing because it was overseas, and I had to... I'm kind of over-exaggerating, but I had to burrow through a snowbank to get to the pussy. You know, to finally get back to her place. I mean, I'm looking over, and it's like, because it's a military installation. I don't want to get shot or nothing like that. They might think I was like a spy or at least a groundhog. So I get back to her door, I knock in, and she's like, who is it? And I said, it's me. And I didn't say my name, I just said, it's me. And that was good enough for her. She opened the door, was like, come on in. And so we got naked, we fucked. And I went, you know, and as soon as I was done, like, okay, you gotta go. And it's like, okay, I'm going. And so I put my stuff back on, I went back through the snowbag, went to my room. So the next day, Juan was, we were sitting at breakfast, and he was complaining, man, I wanted to get with home girl. I said, yeah, she was cool. It's like, yeah, man, I really wanted to fuck her. It's like, I said, she was cool. You know, he said, wait a minute, motherfucker, did you? Yeah, I went on back. And homeboy wasn't there. It's like, man, you sneaky motherfucker. It's like, I was just thinking. I mean, what do you want me to do? Come and get you? What the fuck? I thought when she opened the door, you'd already been there, motherfucker. Shit.
Yeah, man. For those of you wondering, man, it's not a Mexican Juan. It's a black guy named Juan. It's spelled
W-A-N. And when I first looked at it, it's like, man, this ain't that, where's the D at the end? Wand, motherfucker. You're a wand. You're not a wand.
Wand.
Yeah. It's funny because he was like, you know, like nowadays, like people will show you photographs of on their phone of girls they were with. Man, Juan will show up with Polaroids.
Right.
He will show up with Polaroids. Remember Visalia?
He had like an album. Yeah. He opened up like an old door.
Old dusty pictures.
And then he'll ask him, what if your lady finds them? Oh, man, I already changed the date.
What on the white part? But have like a date like 5 years ago. Like,
before he was 94, there. Baby. I met you, what, 91, 96?
Yeah, yeah. We've known each other like 94, 96. Yeah, yeah,
I met you like in 96.
So he was changing the dates.
The dates.
Oh, that's crazy. That is funny. No, Juan's that guy. Juan got mad at me, and I know Juan is a loyal listener, so he's going to hear this. Juan got mad at me because there was this chick that he was involved in, and I had already messed around with her. So, and I was letting him know, it's like, because he was like, man, homegirl's really cool. It's like, yeah, she got a great body, man, but her face really ain't all that. And so I'm really just giving a real honest assessment. I ain't saying nothing bad about the girl in the sense of what you couldn't see. I didn't say, oh, she's a terrible screw or this, that, and the other, or house stinks or none of that. I didn't say nothing like that. And he was saying, well, she's my fiance now, D. After I had said all this stuff, he let me pile it on. He could have said early on, it's like, well, that's my girl. No, but he waited because he knows how I am. Layer after layer after layer of insult he let me do. And then he said, well, that's my girl, man. And it's like, why didn't you? And I looked at him and said, why didn't you say that earlier? Why would you just let me go on like that? He said, well, I just wanted to hear what you had to say. We haven't not been friends since. So he let me completely unload.
with the analysis.
Now that I think about that, that's the second time I've done that. I did that with a female comic. There was a male comic that was screwing this female comic who is now on television. The chick is. And at the time, we had all toured together. And I didn't think much of her looks, her smell. I thought she was funny, but there were things about her that she was dogging him out, and I was trying to be a buddy. And I said, well, man, anybody would screw her. Screw that broad, man. Anybody would screw her. I wouldn't screw her with a 20-foot pole. Anybody would screw her out of their mind, blah, 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 blah. And then come to find out, he was screwing her through the whole tour.
Damn.
He liked those big-ass feet.
Yeah, man. So sometimes you just can't be honest. But I'm not going to stop. Whatever. You can't be, but I'm going to do it anyway.
So what's up, fool?
Good to be on the show, and I'm going to be completely honest. You can ask me anything.
Where are you originally from?
When I came out the womb.
Oh, you were, no, like, where were you? You're not from California, are you?
Yeah.
Originally?
Yeah, originally. Oh, really? I was born in L.A. Yeah? I was born at a hospital called University Hospital, Universal, something like that. It's got tore down. They probably
so you
did it in the riots.
In L.A. and all that?
Yeah.
Went to school?
I went to Inglewood High. I went to, I went to Crozier Junior High. I went to Warren Lane Elementary School. I went to Inglewood High School. And then I went to Cal State Long Beach, El Camino, Long Beach College. You know, and then I became a comedian. So all that learning really helped out, huh?
Yeah.
All that time in school. Could have dropped out in the second grade and done this shit. Fuck, I need an education for it to tell jokes.
Shit, man, I could write sentences.
Right. Right, we don't have to write sentences. Just talk in a sentence. There's a famous comedy writer who is completely uneducated. He hired me to write a book for him, and I'm thinking, dude, you were writing for like big shots, but when I was like a kid. And he said, yeah, but I don't really write that shit. I hire a secretary and I talk, and she writes it all down. It's like, oh, so you're not all that smart. He said, I ain't smart at all. I just know how to be funny.
Wow.
So, yeah, so all of you listening out there that think, man, I need to go to school if I'm going to be a comedian. No, you don't. Drop out right now. Tell your parents, fuck this shit. what do I need grades for? Who I just go in the club. For? Be funny.
Yeah, man. You know, all you do is got to find somebody that could add percentages.
Yeah. You know, or find somebody that can get you your roofies. Want to talk about that guy, or do you guys have?
Yeah,
no,
man. So
can we talk about him?
Let's talk about
Okay.
First of all, man, you have a book.
I do.
Pimp Down: The Rise and Fall of Cat Williams.
Yes, this is true.
And how's that book doing? Where can we find it, first of all?
You can find it at Amazon.com under that title, Pimp Down: The Rise and Fall of Cat Williams. I took a lot of flack for that book when I first came out with it.
And when you took the flack, was it from the black community?
Yeah. Yeah. Mainly. You know, white people, Mexicans, y'all didn't care.
And why they get mad?
We were intrigued.
Well,
first of all, we were intrigued. We were like, okay, that's where Demilitant been all these years. Because when you open up for somebody, you fucking pretty much just fucking disappear, man.
This is true.
Because when I was with Gabriel, when was the last time you saw me? Felipe fell off the map.
Right. Once you're on tour, you're gone.
On tour, you're gone.
You're gone.
All they care about the big shot.
Yeah.
Shane, you're still doing the same 10 minutes.
Right. Right, and you better do that same 10 minutes, because that's the funny stuff all the way across the country. So you start changing up and trying to be like, oh, let me try some new material tonight. Kick your ass off that tour.
Don't be bringing no new shit, Rodrigo.
Right, because you're not there to enhance your career. You're there to support.
Support.
That's it.
People
otherwise,
don't know that, huh?
Huh?
People don't know that. They want to outdo the headliner.
Right.
One headline for 10 minutes.
Cat did this. He didn't do this on our tour, but he did this on a tour later. There was a chick on the tour, and she was trying to light it up. You know, like, I guess she had guests in the audience, so she's going to go up there and rip it apart.
Cookie.
No, it wasn't Cookie. It wasn't Cookie, and it wasn't Leslie. It wasn't Linnell, and it wasn't Melanie. It was some chick he got later on. And she came backstage like, that was funny, huh? He punched her in the gut.
Oh, no.
He said, oh. Yeah. He said, oh, you going to light it up. Oh, he said, oh, you going to rock the house. And busted her right in her gut.
That's what people don't know. She's a realist right there, dog.
This is comedy, ladies and gentlemen.
Red basket.
You don't try to outdo the headliner, especially when the headliner is hanging around known gangsters. Because then he can punch you in the gut, and ain't a damn thing you can do about it. But get punched in the gut.
Headline on my show.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy. I heard that. I heard about fools getting yelled at. Go, hey, dog, you gotta fuck it up.
Yeah, you know, you gotta hold back a little bit, and you know, don't too much. You went a minute over your time. No, he just punched you in your gut.
Shit.
And so I think next time he don't have to give you no instruction.
Hell,
you
know, shit.
You might go up and bomb, bitch. The next time.
She would have put on some yellow pages on her stomach. Walk out there like Damon from Next Friday.
Right.
God damn, dude.
Fuck, dog.
Yeah, he don't play.
Let me tell you, man. I ain't gonna lie. I felt like doing that sometimes, man. Like, I felt like fucking somebody up. Like, when we were on the last Comic Standing tour, everybody was supposed to do 20 minutes.
Right.
The dude who lost second to me, he took 36 one time.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't go too well.
Trying to stretch.
Okay.
First of all, it didn't go too well, but I was like, this motherfucker.
He trying to make himself look like, I really should have won.
Yeah, I already won.
Right, motherfucker, in front of millions and millions of people. This 2,500 that you rip in front of, it don't mean shit.
It don't mean shit.
They could even leave and say, you know what? You should have won. Okay, but you're not getting my money, my notoriety, my press. You're not getting any of that, motherfucker. And when they Google winners of last Comic Standing, oh, what do you know? Your name didn't come up. But you ripped in Boise. Oh, shit.
You're the man.
Right, in Boise.
Bob and Tom love you.
Right, you killed me on the interview. Yeah. That morning. You are funnier than me before 8 a.m., motherfucker.
Oh, he kills it on radio. But goddamn, so this girl got punched in the gut?
In the gut.
How did she go over?
Yeah, she went over and she, you know, was trying to, like, destroy.
Oh, man. I've worked with young comics that, like, the promoter gives them a break. Yeah, man, this guy sold 50,000 tickets for us. Or he promoted, he put tickets all over every barbershop, every strip bar. He's mm-hmm. going to do 5 minutes. And most of the time, the person does a good five, but right. She went over.
Yeah, and she was wrong, on the tour.
That's wrong.
She was on the tour. I mean, you get the light, you know when it's time to get off, and you're not doing a club. So it's like, okay, 10 minutes. Well, fuck, I'm going to do 12. Shit, I'm going to get this joke out. No, you're on a tour. You're getting paid. So you've been hired to do a job. Do the damn job. Otherwise, you get punched in the gut. from a guy who's 5'3". That's the funny part. See, Cat, the girl was bigger than him. She outweighed him. She was taller than him. She probably could have whooped his ass in a straight-up square fight. But if he punches you in the gut, and then he's got bodyguards and Suge Knight hanging around, what, you going to fight him back? No, you're going to get your ass beat down. Because most men really aren't going to punch a woman in the gut. So if he's punching, if the smallest guy around is punching you in the gut, you can imagine what these big motherfuckers going to do to you. So now she stood down, you know, I mean, she kind of slumped over. And then she stood up and said, okay, well, I'll never do it again. And I wish I could remember her name because I would out her. Anybody's name I can remember, I will say it on the air. I'm not going to spare you shit.
I can't believe she got gutted.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everything but the blade, yeah.
Remember that openers, do your fucking time and get the fuck off the stage.
Well, here's the deal with Cat Williams. He will take funny people on tour with him. He has no fear of that. But he knows there's a certain amount of time for the opening acts, and then he's ready to come on and do his thing. So if you're going overtime and all that, like Leslie Jones is funny as hell. I will say that publicly to anybody. Leslie Jones is funny. She used to go up in front of Cat when we were on tour. She did 107 shows with the guy. And
Damn. You
couldn't tell who was really funny because she did a ripping 20 to 25. He would come on and do an hour and 15. So it's a whole different energy. It's a whole different thing. But she would go and blaze, and I can't think. I did 104 shows with him. I can't think of one where she bombed. I can't think of one where she struggled. We all struggled in Milwaukee because Milwaukee is weird. You guys are good for that bullshit beer. Other than that, you're fucking weird town. You are. You're a fucking weird-ass town. And even if I come back there and perform in front of you, I will say the same thing to you. You're fucking weird people. Because jokes that worked everywhere did not work in Milwaukee. But yet, at the end of the show, everybody coming up to you, man, y'all was funny as hell. Well, you should have shared that with your face and your laughs. You know, yeah, we was just watching. It's like, motherfucker, this ain't TV. You pay $40, $50, $100 to sit there. Man, y'all had us intrigued. So y'all are weird. And so we all struggled in Milwaukee, but Leslie ripped every show. At no point did Cat say, hey, hold back, or did he punch her in the gut, or none of that shit. So this chick obviously did some shit beyond just, I'm trying to be funny. Leslie got a deal. I mean, through that Cat tour, she got a deal. Hell, she's on Saturday Night Live now, starting off as a writer. Now she's a doggone damn near featured player. She's in a bunch of sketches, and all the sketches are controversial, which is only good for Leslie Jones. Otherwise, like so many people that have done Saturday Night Live, nothing controversial about them, nothing really special. They came, they went, wouldn't recognize them on the street. I was on Saturday Night Live for 2 years. Never noticed you.
Don't remember you.
Yeah.
Who are you again?
Right. Who are you with? I did that sketch with Joe Piscopo in the block. Oh, well, I remember Piscopo. I don't remember you.
There you go. Yeah. I just want to get a free drink.
Yeah. Right.
I was in that season, man. That season with Julia Dreyfus and Damon Wayans.
Oh, you was in that popular season. Right. The one Damon don't even remember. That guy.
I remember he said that they were trying to kick him off the show.
I can believe that.
So my,
he wasn't that funny on that show.
Well, because there was a time, man, like when you were doing My Room, remember Wild Coyotes? Let people know, bro. Wild Coyotes, bro.
Wild Coyotes, and then they changed it to Tortillas. Right.
Cat Williams did that show when he was Cat in the Hat.
Yeah.
Ah.
I remember I got a call from one time from Aretha Jones.
Oh, okay. Who's very funny.
And she had told me that if I have any rooms available for him, you know, he was struggling at the time. Do I have any rooms? And I said, yeah. Shay could do my room. I know you're black. He did that joke. If you're a black neck,
Oh, he did that?
Remember like back in the day, he had that joke? If you're a black Nick.
Right, right. He did have that joke. He would never tell that now. I'm sure.
Yeah, and I hooked him up. He showed up, as a matter of fact, with what's his name? Rodney Perry. He brought Rodney Perry.
They were really good friends back then, yeah.
And they were, and I worked with, what's the name was on stage? I think, I don't know if it was Yorsey Tommy or somebody. And he had bagged on them when they walked in. Hey, who invited the midgets?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, and they lit into him.
They lit into him, yeah. Yeah,
and they won.
And they won.
Okay.
Because they both went up on stage afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because Cat and Rodney Perry, individually, they are funnier than Yorsey one-on-one. But together, two against one, they destroyed him.
Yeah, so that was Cat. Yeah. That was Cat in the hat, had the hat, and he had the little trench coat.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he did, that was his big feature next Friday.
Friday
after next,
yeah,
my bad.
That's what made him as far as getting him in where people knew who he was.
He
had a small part.
Were these children before then? Not much, right?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think so. I met him in Oakland around 2000, 2001, and then he came to L.A., and all the comics in L.A. dogged him out. See, there's a reason Cat is the way he is. You have a funny guy who ran away from home at, I think, like 14, joined the carnival. And so he was a carny, and he got into comedy, and he was like, he's from Ohio, Dayton. And so he was doing stuff back there in Florida and everything. And Ohio, woo-hoo. And yeah, I got nothing against Ohio. And so then he came west, and he started in Oakland. And then he came to Southern California because, you know, that's where you got to make shit happen. And nobody wanted to put him in a room. Nobody wanted to give him stage time. Nobody wanted him to do anything. And everything he tried to do, it seemed like everybody was trying to push him back. Like, well, we don't know you, so we ain't going to help you. As a matter of fact, we're going to fuck over you. And so that's why he got a chip on his shoulder with a lot of people. Because it's one thing if you don't do anything to hurt somebody or to help them. It's another thing if you intentionally go out of your way to fuck over them. And that's the way he felt. Like, motherfuckers are fucking over me. So that's probably why he leapfrogged over so many people, because it was like, I can hardly wait to the day when I can get these motherfuckers back. And then he got to that point, and then you got everybody back. You know, they all know you're rich and famous, you fucked over them, but then what? And that's what the book Pimp Down is really about. Everybody wants to be rich and famous. The book's really not about specifically Cat, because there's a lot of people in there. I mean, I talk about Jamie Foxx and Dave Chappelle and a whole ton of comedians.
One of the stories that tripped me out was that, and it's funny you say that because I did smoke crack. I don't know you never saw me, but at the time I did.
Oh, okay.
I did it, you know.
I did it back in the 80s when it came out.
But then you mentioned it. I was selling that shit. But you said that, you said there was a comic out there that was telling people that his mama died and
right.
He was using the money for crack.
Yeah.
Scandalous motherfuckers out here, man.
Yeah.
How did he
do
that? What was he telling people?
He would go. Now, this wasn't Cat, so in case you tuned in and don't think Cat Williams was smoking crack and lying about his mama. No. This was a comic. His name, and I can say his name. What the fuck? He ain't done comedy in 20 years. His name was Mr. Window. Big fat guy. And
Mr. Window.
And he, and when I say big fat, I'm talking about obese. Like Mr. Window, he had to open the second door for him to be able to walk in the building. You know, he had the two doors. He had to open the second one for him to get in. So, and he didn't bathe much. So that was kind of the reputation. You knew Mr. Window was in the club even when you were in the parking lot getting out your car. Oh, Mr. Window must be here tonight. So you walk in the club, and what he did was, there was a club called the Comedy Act Theater, which was Robin Harris's old club. Then there was another club called Maverick Flat, and J. Anthony Brown used to host that. So Robin was dead. They had other hosts over at the Comedy Act. A.J. Johnson, I came over to the Comedy Act. A.J. Johnson, the comedian, pulled me over, and he said, hey, watch what's getting ready to happen. And he said, don't go nowhere. Because I was getting ready to go in the club. He said, don't go nowhere. Watch what's getting ready to happen. So he got on the phone, AJ, and told Window, stand right here. And he called up and he said, hey, you know, this is AJ Johnson. And I'm sorry to hear about the tragedy of what happened with, you know, the death in the family and so forth. And I just wanted to call because Mr. Window is here and he wants to talk to you. And so he said, so he handed Mr. Window the phone, and he said, watch this, D. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, this motherfucker been going around telling people that his mama died, and so he's been getting money. And we know now that he's been using that money to smoke crack, because he came here last night with the shit, and he made about $650. And I said, well, who's on the phone? He said, his mama. So, and then when Wendell got the phone, his face dropped.
Damn.
And then he recovered real quick because, you know, he's an actor. He's a comic. He's an actor. And then when he got off the phone, he had the greatest line I've ever heard. He said, AJ said, so I thought you said your mama was dead. He said, well, my mama is dead. That ain't my mama. That's the woman that raised me.
Damn. Damn, he good.
Crack he's good. Oh, man, crackheads are so inventive. So, yeah.
Was he funny?
Actually, he was funny. He had a joke where he said, y'all probably think this is belly. This ain't belly. This is dick wrapped around my waist. That was kind of funny for a big guy to say. That is original. It won't be now because people are going to hear it.
I think I've heard it already.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, he told it back in, 1991, 92, somewhere in 89, 90. Yeah. So that was the first time I had ever heard it. You know, I got a big dick. This ain't belly. This dick wrapped around my waist. Who has told that? You?
I don't know.
No.
Back. Dick skin.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the deal with Wendell. Now, as far as Cat and the Pimp Down book, the whole motivation for that was I was trying to write a book about fame and how some people get famous and they're really not ready for it.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that can happen to you and how people judge famous people. Like, Cat was blasting Britney Spears and other people have blasted Cat. And, you know, I'm sure Britney blasted people. But the bottom line is there's no class for fame. So you don't know, like, when you won Last Comic Standing, it took you to a whole other level. There was no class for that. You didn't know. Had you not been in the business as long as you had been and had seen other people do stuff, fuck up, do smart stuff and all that, it might have knocked you on your ass. So it happens to everybody. It can. What has happened to Cat Williams, really, outside of punching the girl in the gut, could happen to any of you. It could, because if the Illuminati comes after you, if, you know, certain people, gangsters or whatever, come and say, hey, I want to be in the business of dealing with you, what you going to say? It's like the Suge Knight situation. People say, well, how can we keep Suge around? How's he going to make him leave? Really? What are you going, okay, Suge, I've had enough. It's time for you to go. Really? Is it that simple? You got to go, gangster.
And is that what happens when brothers get famous? Other, like, gangsters come in, or do they invite them in and they start taking a piece of the cake? Or what?
I
really
think
happens?
That's what happens to all successful artists. You look at B.B. King. Here's a good example. B.B. King is still having to break out Lucille and play, and I heard this years ago. The reason he has to do that is because he made a deal early on with gangsters that they said, okay, we will help promote your career and you'll be a big star, but whenever we tell you to work, you're going to have to work. And so even though he's an old man, I think he's got diabetes or he's got some ailments wrong with him, that don't matter, man. The money got to keep coming in. Your name is still selling. A certain amount of people will pay top dollar to see B.B. King right now. So I don't care if you got a headache or gout or you got a goiter or whatever. Take your old ass on that stage and pluck that guitar. And if you don't, well, what if B.B. King just said, I ain't going to do it no more. You can kill me. No, we'll never kill you. But you do have family. That's how gangsters do it.
So how did you get started with Cat Williams? How did you just show up and they go, let's roll, man?
What happened was, like I said, I knew him in Oakland, and then he came down. He was to a place called Hollywood Park Casino.
Damn, I remember that room.
Okay, yeah, he had that room, and that was one of the first really successful rooms he had. And
the hop, too, right?
And I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's because I do tell the truth and I don't bite my tongue because I really don't give a damn because we're all going to die one day and so there's nothing any mortal man can do to me. I'm really honest and I'm not going to backstab you. I would come right in the front and say, hey, well, you know what? I want your room. So if you ever let me substitute this motherfucker, it's going to be mine. Whereas this guy said, hey, Cat, man, let me do your room. Let me do your room. And then he would leave town and people would try to undercut him.
Yeah.
He knew I wasn't going to do that because he knew I didn't give a fuck about having my own room at that time. So he said, D, would you substitute Holtz for me? And I said, man, that's cool, you know, because I know those other guys who would want to do it. He said, I don't trust them motherfuckers. You know, so he would let me guess host his room, and he always came back because his room was always intact. The owner could never tell him at the casino, well, D. Militant would cut a deal for me for this, so I'm going to go with him because that wasn't about that for me. And so when he got famous, which I really hadn't been paying much attention to, I was writing my book, Black Comedians on Black Comedy. I just went to interview the guy. when I, the last time I had seen him, he had a house in Inglewood he was renting. And then when I called him, I said, hey, man, can I come by the house and I want to do an interview with you? He said, yeah, but come to Woodland Hills. So he had a two-story, I don't know, five, six-bedroom house in Woodland Hills by that time because he had already done some movies. But like I said, the thing is, when you're in show business, unless it's something really major, you're kind of paying attention to your own career. You can't really follow everybody else's thing. So he was bigger than he had been, but he wasn't like huge that he got to be. I interviewed him in 2005, and when I interviewed him at his house, he said, I got this thing coming out called The Pimp Chronicles. It's coming out on HBO, and it'll be out in a few months. So I said, yeah, the book ain't coming out for like 10 months. He said, okay, cool. So the book will be after that, because he wanted to frame his questions, you know, the answers around if he was famous already or not, because he knew it was coming. And so once Pimp Chronicles hit, then boom, he blew up. So that's how I got in with him like that. And then I called and asked him to do me I was doing a show at the Ice House, and I still didn't know how big he was, and I don't know if this was insulting to him or not. I said, ask him to come do the show. He said, I would do it for you, but I'm going to be out of town that weekend. It's like, okay, fine. Then I was at my house with my ex-wife, which means I was trying to get out of the house. And I went down to a Chinese restaurant, and one of his bodyguards was there, and he said, man, you need to call Kat. And I said, well, for what? And he said, man, he's getting ready to do a lot of things. He's got a place out in the marina now. He's got an office out there. He's moved. He's getting ready to move his house. He's getting ready to do a lot of movies and stuff. You need to call Kat. I said, okay, I'll call him. He said, nigga, I'm talking about call him right now. Fuck that shit.
Here's a phone.
Right, because he knows how dudes will say, yeah, I'll do it. It's like, no, motherfucker, you understand. I mean, like, right now. So I got on the phone in front of him and called up and set an appointment. Went the next day and met with Kat, and he said, okay, we're getting ready to do a movie with Eddie Murphy. I'm getting ready to do my own movie. So here's the script for my movie. Punch that up. Get ready to do a movie with Murphy. Come back here at 7 o'clock. We're going to have a meeting with Aaron Magruder and some other people. And so it was instantly on. And he was one of the greatest people I've ever worked for. We did movies. I was the script supervisor. We did specials with, like, Larry the Cable Guy and the BET specials and all that. And then he started bringing, like, chicks around who he didn't know anything about.
Kat's harem.
Kat's harem.
I read them in the book.
Right, right. So he brought his harem around.
How many girls were there? Three, right?
There were three. And he really didn't know any of them.
They were not the most good-looking girls.
They were not. They were raised. They were raised and bred on Alpo. they were dog food girls, and so that's why he could feed them so cheaply. You know, you don't worry about steak and lobster for these heifers. You know, kibbles and bits.
It's like when Samuel Jackson in that movie. Foxy Brown, when he told me, I just found a Greyhound station, took her to Inglewood, told her it was Hollywood.
Right.
Jackie Brown. She just got off the bus from Kentucky.
Took her to Inglewood, told her it was Hollywood. So, no, they were not the best looking three girls in the world. They didn't know each other.
No.
And here's the deal: if you ever get famous or you're trying to run a bunch of women and all that, make sure that they don't know each other, but make sure that it stays that way. So the three of them conspired against him, and then they were the ones that told the rest of the staff and crew that, you know, oh, Kat's just resting. He's in a rest home. And they didn't say nothing about he was going through mental situations. They didn't say where he was. But they just kept us all separated and confused while he had went through his mental breakdown, nervous breakdown, I should say. Yeah. And they ripped him off. They took money, jewels, paintings off the wall, paraphernalia. He had his shoes autographed by Shaq. That was gone. You know, and it was Shaq's real shoe. I mean, big as a motherfucker. I mean, I took a nap in that shoe one day. Big the fucking shoe was, man. And so it was autographed by two cat from Shaq, you know, and gone. So, you know, they sold that shit on eBay. And so they were just not three reputable women, but he kind of put himself in that position because he did trust those who had not earned trust, put it that way. And here's the deal, and you probably know this. When people get famous, they don't want people they hung around when they weren't famous around them.
Yeah, I read that in the
Yeah. They want ass kisses around. And the people that met you once you were already famous.
Yeah, because you said that it's because you don't want a person from the past. Yeah, I remember this fool only made $2.
Right.
I mean, how long is he going to keep saying that?
And they say it all the time.
All the time. Yeah. It gets annoying after a while.
Right. So why would you want him around?
Yeah.
Man, I remember when you didn't have shit.
Yeah.
I know you got a jet now, but man, you know you didn't have shit, brother. You did not have shit. We always wondered about you. It's like, okay, fine. But I'm employing you now. I'm paying your check. Why are you bringing that shit up?
I know, like, people from the neighborhood, they go, oh, I remember Felipe was eating off dog food with family.
Yeah, okay, right.
That's how you're going to greet me, motherfucker?
Mm-hmm.
Get the fuck out of here.
You think you a big shot now, don't you?
You're a big shot, huh? He's a Hollywood now.
Right, but you didn't used to be shit. Like, so... Why would you want people like that around you?
So you got rid of those people?
Got rid of everybody that even said anything like that. And I stayed around because I never said nothing like that.
I remember when you were Cat in a Hat gone.
Yeah, right. I never even brought that up. Hey, you Cat Williams now? You Cat Williams. I'm not going to sit here and do the, you Cassius Clay. Fuck that Muhammad Ali shit. You Cassius Clay. That's how you get your ass whooped through a whole fight.
You ain't from Oakland, you're from Dayton. Oh, right. Punch to the gut.
Right, right. Whatever story he told, because I would always wait when we would ever meet anybody or Cat would bring somebody around, I would always take his cue. Whatever you telling this motherfucker, that's the story. If you said we was up till 3 o'clock last night, even though I was home in bed, if you say we were together till 3, that's the story then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not contradicting you. And, no, he paid very well. He would give bonuses. Like I said, the only problem that happened with Cat was, which can happen to a lot of famous people, you surround yourself in people in your circle who cannot be trusted because there's a lot of jealous people. See, here's the thing. Cat said this a long time ago. He said, I don't want anybody around that wants to be Cat Williams. He knew I never wanted to be him. I didn't want that. I didn't mind playing the role I was playing. Whereas you had other comics that came in, and now they want to act like it's their shit. It's like, motherfucker, do you see whose name is on the ticket?
Motherfucker, you were at Wild Coyotes 2 weeks ago.
Right.
I was crying at the Sunset Room because somebody bumped you, and now you're here?
Talking shit.
Talking shit.
Right.
Taking those
deep like you breaths. Deserve this.
Yeah, I remember so. When Gabriel Iglesias on tour, I remember he had told some comedians and they got pissed off. Like, why are you trying on new material over here?
He said, why are you?
Yeah. He goes, I want to hear the funny.
Right. And he's right. Because there's a difference of a workout and a show.
Yeah.
You should never do new material on a paid show.
With packs sold out.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, regular club shows, sure, whatever the fuck. You pay
me $50, save the new material for that night with only 5 people there and you don't want to go up. That's when you the material.
Right, right.
When there's 17 people
out.
In the room. It's late. No one's paying attention. That's when you go up there and try those new fucking jokes, loser.
Yeah, but you're going to do it in front of 2,500. We played one place at 13,000 people. Really? Who's going up with new fucking jokes? I won a competition that way. A guy who probably should have won the competition off with a new joke. And he told me later on, because he came in second, he said, man, I should have never done that new joke as the opener. And I said, I'm glad you did. Motherfucker, I'm $5,000 up. Thank you for poor judgment, making rookie mistakes. And you've been doing this shit how long? Get the fuck out of here.
So you guys were all traveling in limousines, private jets?
Private jets. That was another perk about working with Cat. Well, limousines, the best hotels, Trump Tower.
You got
Tower.
To smoke a blunt on the plane?
You got to do everything.
Damn.
You got to do it. With that guy and that particular tour. See, I can understand how anybody can be seduced by that lifestyle because it's a great lifestyle. Who wouldn't really want private jets and minions, and, you know, people going around wanting to do everything for you. People kissing your ass. Girls fainting because they saw you and all that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Ah, screaming and yelling.
Fainting,
it's like,
huh?
Yeah. Like you're a Beatles or something like that. Guys losing it. That one always got me when a dude starts, you know, tearing up and slobbering and shit. Man, that's Cat Williams, man. Oh, man. I thought I'd never meet you, brother. It's like, really? Is this a lot like a life, fucking lifelong dream? That you're going to meet a guy that's only been over 3 or 4 years? Really? I had a guy say that to me one time. Man, I grew up on your comedy. I thought I'd never meet you. Dude, I've only been doing this 7 years. Because when the guy said it, I hadn't been doing it that long. Really? You thought you'd never meet me? Well, congratulations. What do you think now? You know, has your life been changed? Has it been enriched? I ain't the savior. I ain't gonna walk on the water. So, I don't know what you expected. If you're blind, let me touch you real quick. I can see now.
So as opening for Cat, did you get like the second rate pussy or the good pussy or the leftovers? Or it was, because I know as an opener, man, when I used to open for Gabriel, I would just stand by the bathroom, bro, and it's on.
That's the thing. When you work for somebody like that, ass is just always around. You don't really have to say anything. You just put the mic in the stand, and it's on. Yeah,
take us, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Rodrigo, how it done?
It was a great time. I'm not gonna lie, and I'm sorry that he had a breakdown and it ended.
It ended.
It ended. I am so sorry that fucking. It was such a great time. I hated to see it end.
So you were like you did the first big tour with him.
The first big tour for a while. He did three tours before he retired. He did Red Grant, Linnell, and Melanie. They went on a small tour. Then they went on a major tour, and I went as a spectator and saw that here in Cali. And then he did the tour where he took Leslie, Cookie, and me. I think he just wanted to kind of flip up. And Melanie and Red, I mean, the reason Red couldn't do it and I got the hosting job was he was opening up for Aretha Franklin. So otherwise, he would have been the host.
You wrote in a book that Cat Williams, he put like a $20,000 hit on you?
Yeah. I don't know if it was $20,000. Interesting story about that. I didn't say you...
Because we're going over the things about... Because you have wrote a letter... I don't want to spoil the book, but he put a hit on you.
No, I'll do a quick spoiler on this. What happened is Cat had a nervous breakdown. It happened in New Jersey. So it is in the book. The book came out in September of 2011. So we're talking about... If you haven't read the book now, please run out and get it. But this is three-year-old information that I'm giving you. So it's not like Cat ain't read the book. So he read it to a relative over the phone. He was complaining, this is some bullshit. Well, this is true. Well, this is fucked up. Well, this is true, though. So, you know, and none of it was a lie. It was just based on your perception. What happened is he had a nervous breakdown, and there was like four or five or six chicks and me. So I was the only guy that saw it go down. His bodyguards and other relatives saw him going through the decline or whatever, but when he actually had the breakdown that I'm talking about, similar to what happened in Oakland, that people saw like 2 years later, after that happened, that it happened a particular night, the next morning, we were all given permission to leave. So he had the limos come and, you know, take us away. And then I got a call a couple of weeks later that, hey, Cat has been checked into a mental institution. He had a nervous breakdown. I said, yeah, no shit. And, you know, what the fuck? And because my thing is, I thought, and I said this in the book, that those girls were slipping him drugs. There was a time where I would go pick up weed from the weed dispensary because I had the card.
Oh, yeah.
And I would, you get $1,000 worth of weed, and I would get a kickback of $100 worth of free weed. It was a great dispensary to go to. So I would say, Cat, you need about $5,000 worth of weed, Cat? Like, no, D, I don't need that much.
$5,000?
Yeah, but I need $1,000 worth of weed, so go ahead and get that. So I would go get the weed, bring it back. And he had a girl named Vicky, and she used to roll the weed, and she would hand it to Cat, and Cat and me would smoke that blunt.
She was the official blunt roller.
She was the official roller. As soon as the weed got there, she said, here, I would hand it to her, and then she would go off and roll the shit. And no, she made them great. She knew how to roll a blunt.
She was hired just for blunt rolling.
She used to work at an auto plant on the assembly line in Texas.
Damn.
Okay, so she was used to assembly type of shit going. I hand her the weed, she rolls the weed, she hands it to Cat. So she knew her. She knew her role. So she would hand the weed to Cat, and then he would fire it up, and we would both smoke. Well, at a certain point, she would hand Cat one and then hand me another. And I said, oh, well, I'm just going to smoke that one with Cat. She said, no, D, Cat's got a special one. This is for you. It's like, huh, okay. Why is his weed? I just bought the weed. So it's all the same goddamn weed. Why is he smoking something different than me? I mean, it's, I didn't ever ask her that, but I'm thinking, what the fuck? And turns out they were putting angel dust in his shit.
Lovelies.
Yeah. They was lacing him. Damn. So because of, you know, you smoking dust and all that, and you know other shit that they were giving him, because I know they asked me one time, do you have any uppers? And it's like, yeah, why? Well, we're trying to keep Cat up so he can do the stuff he's got to do tonight. It's like, well, maybe his body wants to go to fucking sleep. I'm not giving you no uppers because I don't know what else he has already taken. If I give you anything, and it's a, that's how a lot of motherfuckers die, not because of the drug they took, because of the combination of shit. So I never got involved in all that, but I felt that they were like slipping him shit. So anyway, he sends us all away. His relatives hit me up a couple of weeks. Hey, Cat's been checked into a mental institution, and we want you to say what happened preceding him going in. It's like, well, what do you mean? Well, we want you to write a letter for the doctor so the doctor knows everything he did that weekend and he can diagnose him. And I was like, oh, I ain't writing no fucking letters. I'm not getting involved. It sounded like too much like snitchy shit. I'm not getting involved in that. And she's like, oh, okay. So he's your friend. You can go on tour with him. You can take his money. But when the chips are down and he needs your help, you ain't nowhere to be found, huh? And it's like, yeah, that's a good one of what you're saying. But it still sounds snitchy to me. Look, Daryl, the only person that's going to see this is the doctor. This ain't for Facebook. It's not for public consumption. Ain't nobody going to write a book about it.
I'm already read one.
it ain't like anybody going to write a book about the shit. It's for the doctor. So they badgered me, man. They bugged me for like 3 hours that night because I said no and I hung up. And they kept calling me about three times, and finally, what they were saying was logical, and I was damned if I did, and I was damned if I didn't. It was one of those situations where, okay, I won't get involved. Fuck that shit. I'm not going to do it. And then this motherfucker goes down the drain, and you possibly could have been that bit of information that could have helped him. Or you do what I did, and you write the shit, then the motherfucker gets the shit from the doctor because the goddamn nurses took it from the doctor. Ooh, this is about Cat Williams. Hey, Cat, did you know they wrote this shit about you? So it's about six or seven letters. And so he had access to all of them because he's a celebrity. That's another thing. Once you're a star, you can get any fucking thing you want, even shit you ain't fucking supposed to get. So the nurses took him all the letters. So now here's the deal. Seven people saw him have a nervous breakdown. That's why I held up four fingers. Seven people saw him have a nervous breakdown. But the chicks, one of them was his cousin. He dumped her in North Carolina. Once he got out of the madhouse, he dumped her in North Carolina. And she called me. I remember I was shopping in Burbank. And she called and said, Cat's out of crazy house. I said, well, that's cool. Fuck, that's great. She said, no, it ain't great, D, because he got a hold of them letters. I said, well, how the fuck he do that? It's like, I don't know. But he got a hold of him, and he just dropped me in a parking lot here in North Carolina, and I ain't got my purse, and I ain't got nothing. All I have was a cell phone. So I'm letting you know he's on his way back to California, and he ain't happy. And I said, well, that's not good news. You know, I'm not like shaking in my boots, but I'm not happy to hear that. Because at the time, I still had what was considered the company car. Company car for me was a Z4.
Two eighty Z4?
Yeah. It was very cool to drive around. It was just 2-seater. It went up to 160 miles an hour, and I actually took it to 160 miles an hour. So that sucker used to burn up the highway. Love driving that car. So my first thought was, okay, he's out. Damn, I got to get the car back. Because I checked my email, and there was an email saying, well, your services are no longer needed. This is nothing personal, but, you know, Cat is retired now, so he's getting rid of his entire staff. And so, all right, fine. So he gets back to town. I get a phone call. Okay, come by the house. And I go by the house, and everybody's got this solemn look on their face, and bodyguard is in the room and all that. And Cat would hold meetings at his house. He would hold it in his bedroom. And so you have to take your shoes off and all that shit. So I go in the bedroom, and there's like four or five people in there. And he's got this angry fucking look on his face. Like, I'm getting ready to unleash. And so he's talking shit. It's like, what the fuck you doing writing anything? And I said, your family asked me to write that shit. What the fuck, dude? Honestly, how am I aided and helped if you're in jail, dead, in a crazy house, wherever? How does that help me? I'm not a family member. I'm not in the fucking will that I know of. So why would I write anything to hurt you if I didn't think I was trying to help you? Oh, you're going to help me, huh? I made $20 million last year. How the fuck are you going to help me? And I was like, well, does that mean you know? Motherfuckers who make millions don't need help? Really? You were having an, and I had to break it down to him. Dude, you was having a nervous breakdown. What the fuck? Your family came to me. So anyway, can we squash this? He said, it's bullshit. Who came to you? Well, since there ain't no loyalty no more in this motherfucker, I said, your woman and your cousin that you dropped off in North Carolina. Well, she's in North Carolina. Fuck her. Let me get my woman up here. So he brings his woman up. Yeah, he brings his woman up there. It's like, did you do that? Did you call this motherfucker? It's like, well, yeah, we did. And I was like, all right, am I off the hook now? Hell no, you ain't off the hook. Should have told these bitches no. I said, I did say no. Didn't I say no? Well, yeah, he said no. And we had to call him over and over, and he finally, so you finally cracked, huh, nigga? You know, I had to hear all this shit. It's like,
it felt like a gut to the stomach.
Yeah, it felt like he was punching me in the gut. He said, this is some bullshit. So he leaves out the room. So he's mad as fuck. A little vein rolling in the top of his forehead and shit. And so his bodyguard is still there, and I'm tripping like, what the fuck is the bodyguard doing here? You know, why are you even here? This could have been a conversation between me and this motherfucker. So I'm walking around this room, and I walked on the other side of his bed, and there's plastic laid out with baseball bats.
Damn.
And I've seen Goodfellas
everywhere.
I've seen The Godfather. I've seen gangster movies. It's like, oh, it's time to go. So, oh, this is why the fucking bodyguard was here. Oh, now I get it. The bodyguard was going to hold me while you beat me into submission with a bat. There's probably a vat of acid in a back room somewhere.
There was plastic everywhere?
There was plastic laid around. It was,
well,
Mexican, it was
man.
Plastic big enough to hold my ass, put it that way.
Being Mexican, that could have been a real bad drywall job.
Remodeling.
But since he's Mexican,
that's crazy.
I took it as some gangster.
You walked in, it was bubble wrap. Like,
No, it was the flat wrap. It was a regular old flat wrap.
Were they killing roaches or what?
But there was the baseball
that's
bat.
Because
I wouldn't even tripped off the plastic. It's like, plastic, maybe he's going to paint. There's baseball bats, it's like, oh, this is some gangster shit. Okay,
and the bodyguards are still there, huh?
Yeah, and the bodyguard, it was just one bodyguard. I won't say who it was, but you know who the fuck you are. And he was there, and he was a big enough bodyguard that if he had grabbed me, and I'm wiry and I'm strong and I'm fast and quick and all that, but no, he could have gaffled me down. He was a professional bodyguard. He had been bodyguard for a number of celebrities before Cat, and so he knew what the fuck he was doing. So if he had put me in the neck hold, that would have been pretty much it. And so to avoid being killed or maimed or beaten, I left. Hopped in his car, and drove off. It's quick. Fast, 160 miles an hour, and got back home. But the next day, now this is the weird part. The next day, I had to do the Sundance Film Festival because I had a movie, Why We Laugh, which was adapted from my book. So I had to go.
Why We Laugh, that's the one that was on HBO?
That was the one on Showtime.
That was you, right?
That was me.
With Chris Rock?
Chris Rock was in it,
one.
And Bill Cosby, and a whole lot of other people, you know.
Why We Laugh on HBO, that was you.
It was Showtime.
Yeah, Showtime. Yeah, Why We Laugh.
Yeah, I don't want to give HBO credit they don't deserve.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Everybody that does a special, they always say HBO. And HBO doesn't give specials out to people like me.
Right. They don't give specials out anymore.
They do, but you have to be like Paul Rodriguez or Gerald Michael, I think.
Right, because there was a time that they were developing comedians. Now they just go with, like, old-time motherfuckers. So the next day I had to bring him back his car because, I mean, it was his car. I wasn't going to keep the shit. So had another car. Me and my old lady were going up to Utah for the Sundance Film Festival. And so I came, I gave him the keys to the car, and we never made eye contact because he didn't want to do that. And because I had got away. See, and everybody was standing out in the front yard, but because I was with my old lady and it was broad daylight, I really wasn't worried that you're going to grab me and take me in the house and beat me. You know, got too many fucking witnesses out here. And so gave him the keys, hopped in the car, we split. And because of the divorce that I had, me and my new wife, who's my wife now, we left California in July of 2009. Yeah, that's what you would call it. And I got wind of Cat having a hit on me in 2011. So it was like 2 years later. I was gone for 2 years. And people thought, you left because the cat is going to kill you. And it's like, no. He tried to kill me in January. I didn't leave until July. He knew where I lived because he was my employer. He had my fucking address. So at any time he wanted to come by after the plastic and the baseball incident, he could have easily come by my house. I never was looking over my shoulder or around corners because my thing is, okay, I got away. Is he really going to pursue me to kill me? Or so 2 years later, I'm in Alabama. Been in Alabama for two goddamn years damn near. And then I'm starting to hear, for four people called me who do not know each other and said, Cat Williams got a hit on you. And then somebody would call like 3 weeks later, man, word on the street is Cat wants to have you killed. And then, you know, 3 weeks after that, somebody said Cat's trying to kill you. And so when you get the fourth call, it's like, wow, I'm not feeling comfortable about this. Even though I'm in the middle of nowhere in Alabama, now I had to break out my shotgun. And see, the town I live in Alabama is 1,700 people. It's 1699 now because I left. But normally it's 1,700 people, and most of them are my relatives. So where I live is in the middle of the country. I'm on 20 acres. So you can shoot, you know. So everybody's packing down there. Everybody's got shotguns and, you know, missile launchers and, you know, and everything, handguns and pea shooters and everything else down there. So my thing is, well, if he come down here, sure ain't fucking ain't leaving. You know, you may get me, motherfucker, on a rush, but you ain't getting out of this area. Because I live down one of those roads where you got to take a road and hit a dirt road down another fucking dirt road. So once you're in, it's like Baghdad. You just ain't fucking getting out.
Yeah, welcome to the crossroads.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when I wrote the book, because the reason for writing the book wasn't, hey, I want to get back at Cat. It's like, if anything does happen to me, and if this motherfucker got a hit on me, I want everybody to fucking know it. And I say it in the book. If anything happened, if I get struck by a fucking bolt of lightning, don't question God. You question Cat Williams. You know, I ain't fucking bullshitting about that either. And this was before Suge Knight. So, you know, I guess the thing with Cat was, after a while, because then he started, you know, after he was mad at me and all that, and the book came out, and I heard he was really mad at me when the book came out. But then there were other enemies to deal with, people like Faison Love and other people, you know, Mike Epps and other people he didn't like. So I kind of faded to the backdrop. And like I said, the book's been out fucking 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you know that's the reason why I wrote the book as an insurance policy. So, yes, I am still alive. But if anything happens, unless Cat himself is dead, it was that motherfucker.
You got to get that book, man. Buy that book.
Yes, get that book. Pimp Down, The Rise and Fall of Cat Williams.
So you moved to Alabama, and then you came back to L.A.?
Yeah, I'm back here now, and I'm going to get ready to go back to Alabama.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because I'm doing so much writing and there's so much stuff going on for me back there. I just partnered with the Comedy Hall of Fame, which I sit on the advisory board, and I've been on there for like 2007. The Comedy Hall of Fame came to me, and people were like, well, who's the Comedy Hall of Fame? They, just like the Baseball Hall of Fame, Football Hall of Fame, any Hall of Fame, they archive famous comedians. Jerry Lewis, Phyllis Diller, Carol Burnett, Larry Gilbert, Sid Caesar, all these big shots. And so when I wrote my book, Black Comedians on Black Comedy, they said, hey, you know, you are a historian, you're an expert on black comedy. We do not have a representative of black comedy in the Hall of Fame on the advisory board. So we want you to be on our board of directors. And it's like, I would love to. And so can you bring somebody in? So I brought Robert Townsend and Franklin Ajayi in. I got Cat archived because we were still cool at the time. Joe Torrey, some few other people that I brought in as far as talent. But as far as board members, I brought in Robert Townsend and Franklin Ajayi. Oh, I brought in Ronaldo Ray, too.
Yeah. Give me some Ronaldo Ray.
Yes, you have a Ronaldo Ray story.
Nah, dude, it's a quick little snippet. I was doing the Rumble Room back in the day, like 2002, I think.
Ernie G?
Yeah, Ernie G's right.
Ernie G!
And he's sitting there with David Drozen. I didn't even know it was in the room. And I used to do this old-ass joke that, you know, involved in another joke. And it's just about, like, you know, if Jesus was black. If Jesus was really black, he would have turned water into wine. He would turn water into Kool-Aid.
Right.
And I had my little recorder there. And I guess he got upset and went outside and started talking shit to David Rose. And then fucking dumbass Ernie G's like, bro, what did you say, bro? It's like, dick, you were looking at me, fool. And then he's all, and you can hear the recorder after I say that joke. Man, fuck this motherfucker. And then you hear a bunch of shuffling. I didn't even know the recorder was there. So that's the whole story. But I always had love for the man. I didn't even know he was there. The Rolls Royce of comedy.
I was trying out for the BET Comic View for the second time. And I was auditioning in at Michael Collier's room. He got in. I got him in. I said, yeah, he's performing too. He went in. But then they were telling us that there was a one time they didn't let you in because you weren't performing.
Oh, that
and
bullshit.
They were making us laugh. That's what a comedian told us. Yeah, man. Jim Milletown was here 2 weeks ago hatching an egg outside.
What happened?
He said, Jim Milletown was here hatching an egg outside. He was so pissed off.
Because they wouldn't let you in before you performed or like it was like a weird setup.
That could have happened. I probably did, bitch.
He had a dinner room show, remember?
Oh, yeah. And you had to wait.
We had to wait, too.
Yeah, you had to wait outside. And you're a fucking comedian. You got to wait outside before you can go in. It's like, what the shit is that? What? Are you fucking kidding me? Because my thing has always been with every show. I like to be there when the show starts. If not, at least see the couple of acts before me. So I know the tone of the room. I know what's been said.
Get a feel of the place.
Yeah, and you're just not walking up cold and saying some shit that somebody sitting in the front row wearing a big flaming red suit and you address it, whereas everybody's addressed it all night long.
Yeah.
We know why he's wearing it. We know the guy's name, where he works and all that. Here you come. Wow, that's a big bright suit. Yeah, we heard that for the last hour. Do your goddamn jokes. So, when they wouldn't let me in, I probably was pitching a bitch. A nice, reserved, quiet guy like me. It's one of those rare moments. I talk shit.
I was waiting to go up, and then Michael Collier brings up the chef on stage with he's showing up a plate of food. This is the specials.
And he had shushers at that club.
He had security guards that were shushers.
Like, oh, that's funny.
They would walk around and go, shh. For real, there were two guys. They were like big guys. They were wearing suits. They were like umpires, and they would just walk around like if you start like just yapping them.
Wow.
They were called the shush security.
It was the townhouse.
I don't know.
Was it in Inglewood?
It was like in the old wooden building.
Right.
It looked like a cowboy building.
But
they started,
and there was like the free, not the freeway, but there was gas stations around.
But they had dinners there.
Yeah. When you first walk in, there's like a dinner area in the front, and the club, the comedy part was way in the back. That was the townhouse. It used to be a very cool place. Juan Dexter used to run the townhouse along with Hope Flood.
Were you ever a regular at the Comedy Store?
Yeah, I was until Mitzi kicked me out.
You know what's funny about that? I don't know if I said it before, but I auditioned many times for Jimmy Masada at the Laugh Factory, and there one time he told me, "Buddy, I don't see you making it for another 6 years." And I remember that hurt my feelings, man. But later on, man, when I tell the story, I tell people, you know, what the hell did Jamie knew? It didn't take 6. It took another 12. Right? But I felt bad, right?
At the time, right.
At the time. But then I talked to a different comedians, and he told comedians different, crazier stories. Like, I remember Alonzo Bowden, he told him that maybe he should dress up like a football player. And he'll be the football comic.
Oh, yeah. That's gonna work.
Or he told Brad Williams, you know, you're a little person. Grant all the little persons you can find that want to do stand up, and we'll have the biggest, littlest comedy show in Hollywood.
I don't know where these guys come up with this lame ass crazy shit.
Or Mitzi Short trying to change your name.
Yeah, Mitzi wanted to change my name to Whoopsie Wooly. And for those of you sitting out there saying, Whoopsie Willie, no, not Whoopsie Wooly. No, Whoopsie Wooly. Not Whoopsie Willie, because that's what I thought she was talking about at first, too. I said, Whoopsie Willie. She said, no, Whoopsie Wooly.
Give it up for Whoopsie Wooly. Wooly.
Wooly. Are you out of your mind, woman?
Wooly.
I know you're taking a lot of drugs, but are you kidding me? I had auditioned, because they used to do the auditions on Monday night. Yeah. And so I had auditioned the first Monday, there's like 15 people in the audience. She's like, well, you're all right, but I need to see you in front of more people. Come back next week. And we did that for fucking 7 weeks. She would always say, you know, you were funny, but I need to see more material. Come back next week. And so on the 8th week, I went up to the manager and I said, look, dude, man, this is going to be like my 8th fucking week. How much time does a normal comedian perform? He said, 20 minutes. I said, I've given you guys like 45, this is like 45 to an hour worth of material, right? And I said, but I've done like an hour. She said, no, she's going to make her decision tonight. This is it. The decision's going to be made tonight. I said, but she's still only got 15. No, she said tonight will be the night. She's not going to string you on no more. It's like, okay. So I do the 15 people. I was as funny as I was all the rest of the times. And she finally says, okay, I'm going to make you a regular. And so I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, shaking her hand and shit. And she looks at me and says, I like Whoopsie Woolly. This just came out of nowhere, you know. I like Whoopsie Woolly. I'm like, well, I like strawberry pancakes. You know, what the fuck?
Damn, man.
And she said, no, it's a name for you, Whoopsie Woolly. And I said, well, I have a stage name. It's DeMilitant. She said, yeah, I know. But I like Whoopsie Woolly. So she kept staying on that. It's like, well, you know, Whoopsie Woolly, a carefree name like that, like that, like the character you do on stage, you know, happy and carefree. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not really not feeling like the Whoopsie Woolly thing. And I hope it's not a deal breaker. No, you're a club regular, but think about Whoopsie Woolly. And I said, well, since you don't like my name, and I ain't crazy about Whoopsie Woolly, can we just call me Daryl Littleton? Just use my regular name for right now. It's like, I'll think about it. So she said, come here Sunday night, you get your first spot. So I show up Sunday night, and, you know, with the Comedy Store, your name's on the list. They got the times and all that. So I had a 9:15 spot. So I'm looking at 9:15, so I don't see Daryl Littleton and I don't see DeMilitant. It didn't even cross my mind to look for Whoopsie Woolly. So I'm thinking they made a fucking mistake. I'm going to the piano player to say, hey, man, I'm supposed to be on the show tonight. And then I thought, as I'm walking towards him, it's like, wait a minute, let me double check. Hell no. She couldn't have. And I go back and I look at the fucking list. And it's like, Whoopsie Woolly. Like, that's who you're gonna be, motherfucker. I don't give a fuck. This is my club. You know, so
look, man, if Ned Holden could be Carlos Mencia, you could be Woolly.
Well, Whoopsie Woolly would have made me rich and famous. I will admit that in hindsight, and I always have. But I would have been like Jimmy Walker with fucking JJ. I would have hated Whoopsie Woolly. Probably would have had his own show. It probably would have lasted enough to get in syndication, and then everybody would have hated my guts. You know, it's like, man, you a sellout. You an Uncle Tom. And then my white friends who will now have anything to do with me, because they were only with me because I was Whoopsie Woolly. So I knew it was going to be a dead end road to be Whoopsie Woolly. So,
and I couldn't hang around with you because I knew as DeMilitant, and you knew from the old school.
Right, right. you went from being this real militant pro-black brother, you power to the people, to flipping pancakes, you know, and shining shoes as Whoopsie Woolly. So I couldn't do it. And I went to the piano player and I said, look, man, at 9:15, which is in about 10 minutes, you're supposed to bring up Whoopsie Woolly. Let me tell you something. If you call Whoopsie Woolly, ain't nobody gonna show up. He said, what, he's not here? It's like, no, he's never gonna be here. But that motherfucker don't exist. But Mitzi wants me to be Whoopsie Woolly. So what you need to do is call me Daryl Littleton. And I'll come up and I'll do my time, and me and Mitzi will talk about this next week. Because she's not here, it's a Sunday night, I don't want to get you in trouble. He said, okay, I'll call you Daryl Littleton. So he brings me up and do my act, and then the next week, Mitzi's like, so you didn't want to do Whoopsie Woolly, huh? And it's like, no, I'm telling you, that's just not a cool name for a black guy. It's just not going to work, you know? And she said, all right, we'll use your real name. So she used my real name, but then the riots came up. This is, because they brought me in 91. 92, the riots came up. So everybody was all, you know, all scared and all this shit. And a couple of weeks after the riots, she kicked me out. She said, you know, your comedy is too angry. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. You got Sam Kinison, Andrew Dice Clay, and Paul Mooney in your fucking club. Angry? Compared to them motherfuckers, I'm slightly perturbed. Are you kidding me? I'm a little miffed. What the fuck? Angry. My comedy? So, yeah, that's what happened to Whoopsie Woolly.
Damn.
She told Robin Harris's comedy was too black, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. So Mitzi's not a good judge of what will work and what won't. Chris Tucker came to that club later, and I was one, I guess when he got to town, I told him, you should try the Comedy Store, and he became a regular, but that was after Def Jam, so he already had a slight name.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is Mitzi can always put you in her club if you have a following, you have a name, but as far as recognizing what you, the potential or what could be, she ain't that good. I mean, come on. Paulie is her son. Recognized talent? Nothing
crazy,
personal, Paulie.
Man.
Yeah. No, Paulie is what he is, and, you know, he was funny as that character, Weasel.
So, man, now that everybody's in the news, do you think that Bill Cosby thing is a distraction from a lot of things, or is really true, or... Have you ever heard anything like that?
More women are coming out. At first, I thought it was just some bullshit.
Yeah.
A couple of disgruntled chicks or whatever trying to get their moment of fame.
I thought it was just a funny joke at first.
Yeah, at first.
Because Hannibal Burr's hilarious.
Yeah. And he was just bringing up, but you're a rapist, sir. So yeah, Hannibal had just done more research than the rest of us and was willing to bring up old news. So I don't think Hannibal should be crucified for being a comedian,
right,
and just being uncensored. As far as Cosby, I don't think Cosby should be demonized, because here's my thing. Whether he did it or not, if he did it, then he's completely wrong. If you have to drug any woman to have sex with her, you're wrong, whether you're Bill Cosby or whether you're a bum off the street. I like my women actively participants in what's going on. I don't want some limp chick, because I like to do it standing up, just so you know, out there in Radio Land. I don't want to hold some chick up while I'm trying to do it and bring her up and down and up and down and up and down. That just doesn't really work for me, and I don't want to, you know, have her limp and slobber coming out of her mouth and I'm doing it. I like a little pelvic motion. Obviously, Bill Cosby must be a lousy screw if he's drugging chicks. He doesn't want them to go back. Oh, he can't fuck at all, girl. You know, his dick is real little. He's got a little mark on it or something. And that's another thing. Maybe he didn't want to be identified. In other words, you could say, well, Bill Cosby had sex with me. Okay, well, tell us about what his penis looked like or something about his body naked. Well, I didn't see it. Well, bitch, you're lying then. That would be the case in most cases. So what I'm saying is whether he did it or not should not matter to the public in the sense of, I mean, don't let the guy live next to you because, you know, he's got to put himself on that list, you know, that I come and I give roofies. What I'm saying is, comedy-wise, we know more about performers than we should.
Yeah.
And it affects a lot. It affects, if you go to a movie and you know a person's background, if a guy is gay in real life and we know it in real life, but yet he's playing against a woman. Anne Heche is a good example. When she was messing around with Ellen, she did a movie with Harrison Ford where she was his love interest. Well, we know you're a lesbian. We know you're a lesbian and a committed lesbian, not even bi. You're a lesbian. So Harrison Ford, number one, probably would not be attracted to you, and you would not be attracted to him. So the movie bombed based on that, because we can't suspend our disbelief because we already know about you. Now that we know Bill Cosby has done questionable stuff, or 28,000 women have come out and said it, so it's either a mass conspiracy or he actually did it. Now the Cosby Show has to get yanked off. And my problem with that is, did Jamal Warner get accused of doing anything wrong? Well, nope. He's losing out on residual money. What about Phyllis Ayers Rashad? Did she do anything wrong? What about all the girls? What about Lisa Bonet? Did they do anything wrong to have that show yanked off the air? Now they don't get the residual money that a lot of them are banking on. That was they're going to be their future, the future for their kids and their grandkids. The guy who was on that show, Seventh Heaven, with Stephen Collins, they found out he's a pedophile. Now, because he was playing a preacher on a TV show, they have yanked the show. But what was the sons doing? What were the other kids doing? What was the mother doing? Do we know anything about them? No. You got to remember, folks, people are actors. So Bill Cosby playing a doctor on a show don't mean he's a goddamn doctor. If he's playing a wholesome character or that's his persona, that don't mean he's wholesome. So now we found out Bill Cosby gives women roofies. Does that mean all of you out there don't ever want to see The Cosby Show or I Spy No More
or
Cause or Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids? Does that mean that whole chapter of comedy, which is a big damn chapter. He contributed a lot to comedy. Do we want to just say, okay, well, we mad at him, so we don't want to hear no more, and we'll never laugh at it again? It would be like if they took Seinfeld off everything just because of what Kramer did. Jerry didn't do shit. Jason Alexander, Luis Dreyfus, they didn't do nothing. So that's the problem I have. Not that Bill Cosby did it, because I don't know if he did it or not. I wasn't there. Only those women know it, and Bill Cosby know it, to be fact. But as a consumer, and I'm not the biggest Bill Cosby fan in the world, but I'm just defending the right of anybody to be able to do a TV show or a piece of work and have that work exist despite what they do. You cannot take away O.J. Simpson's records because he's a killer and an idiot. But his goal, his record of 2,000 yards in a season still stands. It doesn't negate that. Everything I've done, if at the end of my life I decided to go on a shooting spree and blow up the Klan headquarters, I don't want you to hold that against me. I still want you to buy Black and Blue, the Laugh Records collection that's at Amazon.com, featuring Red Fox, LaWanda Pace, Slappy White, Marsha Warfield, Leroy and Skillet, Ronaldo Ray, Jimmy Thompson, Dap Sugar Willie, Jimmy Lynch, and Wild Man Steve. I still want you to get that.
And Rudy Ray Moore.
And, no, Rudy Ray Moore is not on there.
Oh, no, he's not?
No.
Damn.
But Rudy Ray Moore, well, Rudy Ray Moore is in Black Comedians on Black Comedy, though. Pow.
So, this album you got out, you produced Black and Blue, the Laugh Records collection.
Yes.
How did you compile all these damn albums?
What happened was there was a company called Rock Beat Records, and they had bought up the whole Laugh Records collection. And Laugh Records was in existence from like the mid-60s to the mid-80s, so they did a good 20-year run. Matter of fact, you mentioned David Drozen. David Drozen was a co.
Right?
Yeah, his father was Louis Drozen, who founded Laugh Records, and then brought David in later on.
It was a subsidiary
as his partner
of Island originally, right?
No, Island came later.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, what happened was David left after him and his dad didn't get along. You know, business is business. So he left and started Uproar, which I recorded on, and Alonzo Bowden and a number of other people. But with the Laugh Records thing, what happened was Rock Beat bought that collection, and they came to me because I had done that documentary, Why We Laugh, and the guy, the same executive producer, came and said, do you know anything about Party Records? And it's like, you talking about Red Fox? And I just started naming people, and he said, yeah, you know something about it. So they said, we want to do a compilation box set, and we need somebody to write the liner notes and put the material together. And everybody is saying, you're the guy who should do that. And I said, and everybody's right. I am the guy who should do that, and I would love to do that. So I had to sit for weeks on end and listen to funny comedians and figure out which stuff I wanted to keep and which I wanted to get rid of. So that is the best of maybe, that's like 6 hours worth of material, and I had to listen like maybe 12 hours of stuff and weed out and, you know, do cuts and edits and all that, and then send it over to the guy who was going to do the physical work on it. And then I had to pick the cover art from a number of selections that the graphic artist sent up. So, yeah, I pretty much produced it top to bottom in that particular sense. And I'm really proud of that one. I mean, I'm proud of everything I do, but I'm really proud of that one because a lot of people don't know some of the people that I just named.
Like, this is a lot of history right here, man. Like, Sex Mouth, Leroy Daniels.
Yeah, of Leroy and Skillet. See, he did his own thing, too. If anybody ever watched Sanford and Son, you remember Red Fox always had his buddies come around. He had Bubba, and he would have Melvin, and Melvin was Slappy White, and he would have Leroy and Skillet would come around. And so,
comics?
Yeah. What Red Fox did was all the people he worked with on the road, when he got his break, he brought in all his friends. That's how LaWanda Page got the part of Aunt Esther. Because they wanted a real actress. You know, they wanted a comedy actress. He said, I don't want to work with no comedy actress. He's like, well, you're bringing your friends around, Red. It's like, because I know they're funny. And they don't know how to do TV. He said, you just point the camera, they'll be fine. And so that's why Sanford and Son's a classic.
These comics inspired a lot of people, huh?
Yeah, a lot of people steal jokes from these comics.
They should name them, man. Like Skillet Leroy.
Yeah, so if you, play some tracks or whatever, edit it in, and If you buy this collection, which you should, because it's only $39.95 if you buy the physical version, and I think the digital version is $29.95. So you're getting four CDs. You get a book of liner notes that's 45 pages long that gives you bios on everybody I talked about. Yeah, open it up and I'll show you where the yes, right there.
Oh shit!
Yeah, you get the whole history. Push it from the other side. Yeah, because I did that and I ripped my thing apart.
So you wrote all this?
Wrote all of it.
You are a writer.
Yeah, 45 pages of liner notes. Who fucking does that? But once they said, well, yeah, we want you to write liner notes, I started writing the history of Party Records. And then I would get to somebody like Leroy and Skillet, and it's like, well, most people don't know about Leroy and Skillet. So I researched them, and then I started writing that down. It's like, well, fuck, if you're doing Leroy and Skillet, you got to do everybody. So you got 11 artists in there. So I had to do bios on 11 artists, and then I said, well, fuck, let me do the history of Laugh Records as well as the history of Party Records. So now you got triple layers of stuff going on. And then it's like, oh, fuck, these are liner notes. I got to write about the actual bits that are in the thing. So now I'm having to tell you, in some cases, the actual joke for joke for joke, which you have there.
Yeah.
I describe some of the jokes, but other times I just tell you the flat-out joke.
And so, Wild Man Steve.
Yeah. And so that's how I ended up with 45 pages. And they said, well, man, you're probably going to have to go back and edit this. And it's like, I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know how to edit that thing down.
So these comics were all working the Chitlin circuit?
Yeah. Yeah, they all worked the Chitlin circuit.
Making bucks.
And back then, you could tell somebody else's joke and they didn't mind.
Yeah.
Like if you and me were telling jokes 50 years ago and you had a joke, but you were living in, say, Kansas City, and I came through Kansas City. It's like, man, that's a good joke you got. It's like, yeah, you can have it, you know, or you can use it. Because chances are, if we were both black comics 50 years ago, we're not doing TV.
Yeah.
There is no internet. We probably don't have a record deal. So for you to do my joke and me to do your joke, we're just making sure the joke gets out there because it's a funny-ass joke. So even in this collection, Red Fox, the joke that Ronaldo Ray does, but they tell it differently. LaWanda Page and Red Fox tell the same joke. And the joke is this. There was a faith healer on the radio, and he said, if you can hear my voice, I can heal you tonight. Put one hand on your radio, put another hand on what you want to have healed. So the old woman puts one hand on the radio, puts the other hand on her heart. And she's leaning, you know, wade in the water, wade in. So she's singing and all that. The old man puts one hand on the radio, puts another hand on his dick. And the old lady says, Charles, he said he can heal, not raise the dead. And so they both tell the same joke. Red Fox says the old man put his hand in his lap. LaWanda Payne says he put it on his dick. So they would do little subtle changes like that. See, LaWanda Page, who is Aunt Esther, for people who know Sanford and Son, Aunt Esther was much dirtier than Red Fox. Red Fox really wasn't that dirty. He has a reputation of being dirty because back then he was saying stuff people didn't say. LaWanda Page would just flat out say it. Red Fox might say, Red Fox has a line. He said, I kissed her lips and just for meanness, she twisted her legs and broke my glasses. Okay, so we all know what kind of lips she's talking about. LaWanda Page would have just said, he ate some pussy. She just flat out with it. So LaWanda Page was way ahead of her time. LaWanda Page could have done Def Jam easily. Red Fox might have struggled on Def Jam because he really didn't curse like that.
Little Red Riding Hood walking through the forest, you know, and all at once here come this big wolf. And he says, Little Red Riding Hood, I'm going to eat you up. And Little Red Riding Hood was so disgusted, she threw a basket down. She said, oh, shit, hell, ain't they fucking in these woods no damn way. Old color guy down in Mississippi, you know, down there they call you nigger. So this nigger, he kissed a white broad. So the white man said, nigger, so you know you kiss my wife, don't you? Yes, sir, boss. So you know you kiss Miss Ann, you know your ass gonna be hung, don't you? Yes, sir, boss. So took the nigger out in the woods, gonna hang him, see. So he said, nigger, so you've been with us a long time, and say we're gonna give you a break. We're going to let you pick out the tree you want to be hung on. Nigga running around there trying to find a tree to be hung on. All day long, like to walk them white folks to death trying to find a tree to be hung on. So pretty soon he came to a little bush, you know. He said, "Hey, boss." He said, "Yeah, nigga." Say, "This the tree, I found it." Posse come ran up there, said, "Now, nigga, you know we can't hang your big black ass on that little bush." He said, "Yeah, sir, boss." He said, "I know it." He said, "But I'll wait till it grow up if it's all right with you."
Hey, let me tell you about this chick. It was this chick. She had sneezes. You know, she had to, like almost like when you have hiccups or three or four. She had sneezes, terrible. And every time she went to the doctor, "Doctor, I had these sneezes. And every time I sneeze, I have a climax." He said, "Well, what are you doing for it?" She said, "Sniffing pepper."
Wow. So what's up, fool? What you got going next? Time.
What is going next?
Tell us where you can get your book again so people can find it.
Okay, I'm going to name all of them because I want you to get all of them. Amazon.com houses everything I have until my site is up. Get Black Comedians on Black Comedy. That's the full history of African-American comedy. However, George Carlin is in there. Cheech and Chong is in there. Lenny Bruce is in there. Because I didn't classify black comedy as just black. Like, if Clarence Thomas started doing jokes, it ain't black comedy. Okay, it's just some fucking coon bullshit. The second book was Pimp Down, The Rise and Fall of Cat, which we have discussed extensively. But just for the record, I hope Cat all the luck in the world, and I hope he gets away from negative elements in his life, because he is a funny comedian. At the end of the day, despite what mental stuff he's gone through and all that, he's a funny comic. And I like funny comedians, so I hope he gets his shit together, and people can laugh at him for years. And he doesn't try to kill me anymore, otherwise I'll put out another goddamn book. I wrote a book called Comedians, Laugh, Be a Lady, and that's full history on female comedy. So it's the female version, basically, of black comedians on black comedy, except it's not just what I would call Anglo-Saxon comedians. Like, if you look at the cover, you'll see Phyllis Diller and Ellen and everybody else, but I also put not only black comedians in there, like, you know, Moms Mabley, Whoopi Goldberg, Linnell, Melanie Camacho, Leslie Jones. All people like that are in that book. But also, you get Latin comedians, like the Latin Divas of Comedy are in that book, and the Sexy Mamitas are in that book. And I had a guy who reviewed the book, and he said, "Well, why are these black and Latin comedians? Because if I didn't write it, they probably wouldn't be in."
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I've read books about female comedians, and there's very little representation for minorities, and it's like, what the fuck?
We should do one, you and I, Latino comedians.
You know what? Ernie G approached me about doing...
wrong guy.
I thought I would tell you. I thought I would let you know, hoping I ain't blowing nothing for you, Ernie, but you approached me damn near 10 years ago. When I came out with Black Comedians on Black Comedy, Ernie G came...
I remember him saying this.
And he said, "Man, we should do Latin comedians on Latin comedy." And it's like, you should. "And would you help me with it?" I said, "Of course I would. I mean, I'm not Latin, but I would help you with the structure and whatever you needed. But you need somebody who's actually Latin to write it." Because it's just like if a white guy had written Black Comedians on Black Comedy... Not that he couldn't have done it structurally and historically, but he would miss certain things that I, being a black comedian, put in there. So when Ernie said, "Well, would you co-write it?" Well, dude, I can help you, but you need that Latin flavor. You will need the phrases. You will need, in other words, I want to smell the Latin coming off the page the same way I smell the black coming off the page. You can't hire anybody. So my wife co-wrote the book, Comedians Laugh, Be a Lady, with me, because even though I can research and all that shit, I'm not a woman. I don't know certain things they go through. So, and she did. And we found out there was one female comic who went to do a gig, and she got in her shower and she came out, and the promoter was sitting in her front room. Because as comedians, you know, when you go to do a show, you go to the hotel, and I'm Felipe Esparza, they give you a hotel key. Well, there's always two keys.
Yeah.
But, you know, and sometimes they'll ask, "You want one or two or two? I'll give me both keys." Well, what this promoter did was, he said, "I'm getting the room for such a name," whatever her fucking name was. And he took one of the keys. So when she got to the room, and he knew she was already checked in and all that, she was in the shower. He didn't know that. He used the key and came in her room. So she in the shower, she come out butt naked. "Oh, motherfucker, what you doing here?" And he's like, "You want to go to the movie? Want to go to the mall? How the fuck you get in my room?" Well, there was two keys. I have one. That's never happened to you. And it's never happened to you. It has never happened to me. Why? Never. Because we're guys. Yeah. If a promoter's in my goddamn room, we're fighting.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw
that's
flying,
the bullshit. What the fuck are you doing here, dude? No, I'm not asking you shit. You're swallowing the TV. I know what you're trying to pull. You're trying to pull some bullshit. How the fuck you got my key? So, you know, the girl told him to get lost and all that. But this is the kind of shit women have to go through on the road. Adele Givens told us a story that's in the book where a promoter wanted to come and pay her. He said, "Now I got your money, but I ain't got all of it. So I tell you what, let's do some of it in money and I'll pay you the rest in dick." And she said, "No, that would be like a negative." You know, and then you would even owe me more money. So no, motherfucker, ain't no payment in dick. So that's the stuff women have to go through. And then I wrote a book called Forefathers because I had seen this special, which was on HBO. Robert Wool did it about the American Revolution, and I thought it was really interesting. And so I did my own take on that, but it's like coming from a black point of view, because there were a lot of black people involved back in the American Revolution besides Crispus Attucks, who fucking your involvement. You got shot. The first guy to get shot was a black guy.
The Boston Massacre.
Yeah, right, right. And so it's kind of like, you know, the first guy to die in the science fiction movie was a black guy. So it became the stereotype, you know. So in my version, you know that they did drugs back then, that they were smoking opium. You know that they were drinking alcohol because water and milk were not safe, so everybody drank liquor. Even if you were a kid, you had to drink liquor. So everybody was fucked up back then because that's all you were drinking. And so your system obviously wasn't doing that well. That's why they died so young back then. So they were doing drugs. They were drinking alcohol. Everybody was cheating on their wife. Everybody owed money back then. So most of the founding fathers were deadbeats. And so I give the real deal in that book. And then I wrote a book called How to Be Funny. Whether you're a comedian or not, if you're a comedian, the book can definitely help you. If you're not a comedian, but you have to deal with, like, you're in sales or you're a preacher or a politician, anything where you need to be funny for the public, you should get How to Be Funny. And I've had professional comedians, when I say pros, guys have been doing it 20, 25, 30 years, saying, "Man, I'm glad I got that book because it reminded me of shit that I had forgot to do." It's got contracts in there, how to do negotiation, everything else. And then, yeah, that's all the books. And then, of course, Black and Blue, Laugh Records Collection. Get
it? Hell yeah.
Deep. So the next thing I'm doing is I am I might be teaching at the university level.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The Comedy Hall of Fame is trying to get me in universities because they have a program where they teach kids improv and all that. But now they've taken it up to the university level and they're looking for lecturers and then they said if you're a good enough lecturer or whatever, you can actually be. They would make you a professor. It would be an honorary thing, but you would be a professor and teaching comedy. And so my thing is, that'd be cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, if you're teaching at a university level, they put you up in a house and they treat you like comics are supposed to be treated when we're not on stage. So that would be kind of cool.
You also had a while back a list of promoters.
Mm-hmm.
For sale?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good list if you're a young comic because, man, you're saving people heartaches.
Yeah.
And people think that that shit's called free, man. Nah, man, I'm giving you like years of legwork, motherfucker.
Like the Cat book, a lot. I took flack for that. Just so you know, I don't give a fuck about flack. fuck your flack. Keep it coming. When I first did that, the Honest Promoters list, I was living in Alabama, and I wasn't really doing as much road stuff, but what I noticed was there's some promoters that pay you, and they will pay you religiously, as they say. They will do everything they say they're going to do, and then you got motherfuckers that are just flakes. And I noticed what a lot of comics were doing on Facebook
Pierre Stockwell.
Was... Pierre Cockrell, right. Yeah. That motherfucker is a crook. Don't fuck with him, and if you do, you get what you deserve.
Yeah, Linnell mentioned him, too.
Did she?
Nail, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We can't stand him. What he did to Scrancho was, this comedian named Scrancho, he flew him out and he paid him his money. And then when he took him to the airport the next day, he's like, "Yeah, yeah, your ticket's waiting at the counter." So Scrancho goes like, "I'm Scrancho." And they say, "Yeah, we got your ticket. That'll be $342. He said, "No, no, no, it's already paid for." "No, it was reserved." So he had to pay some of the money that he made on the gig to get himself back home. So he wasn't happy about that, but that's the way Pierre Cockerill used to do it. But comedians were going on Facebook and naming all the bad promoters. And my thing is, that's not making any of us any fucking money. I would rather go ahead and give you a list of promoters that are good. So I compiled a list along with another comedian. I'll leave him out of this. But we compiled a list of what were considered very honest promoters. And we updated the list, and it was like 100 promoters, and some of them had two or three different spots. So you end up with like 300 or 400 contacts, really. And what I noticed about people, human nature, if you give people shit for free, they don't appreciate it. It's like people who inherit shit or people who win the lottery. You blow it. Think about it. As comedians, if you go out tonight and you make, say you do 20, 30 minutes and they pay you, I don't know, $50,000. You're not going to penny pinch every cent of that because you made the money telling jokes. If you had to tar roofs in a whole city, block, square area, that $50,000 means a hell of a lot to you because you really worked your ass off for it. So it's easy come, easy go. If I gave, because I had a comic say, why don't you just give us the information? Because there's too many of you knuckleheads out there that won't use it properly. You're not ready for it. Anybody that comes to me, I let them know, you can't be an open micer. This is not an open micer list. These people are hiring feature acts and headliners. If you don't qualify for that, and I would have people say, I want to buy the list. It's like, well, how long have you been doing comedy? I've been doing it for 6 years. Are you a feature or headliner? Well, I'm still doing open mics. You really shouldn't buy this list. I can't stop you if you still want to buy it, but I'm letting you know when you call these people up, they're going to ask you the same thing I just did. How much time do you have? I got a tight 15 minutes. Then I can't hire you. You can come do the room if you want to be an opener, but you're not going to get paid what you want to get paid. I'm not going to put you in a hotel. I'm not going to fly you out here, and I'm not going to pay you. So the honest promoters list, I just had somebody buy it 2 weeks ago, and I haven't advertised that thing in a year. Glad you brought it up. Anybody wants to get it, it's still available, and it has been updated.
All right, people, it's been updated. So all you comedians out there in Vegas who are listening or looking
and
for
and whining
work,
and complaining.
Whining and complaining. You know what? This is no Dave Triple Run.
Right.
This is no China Lake. This is no Pat Wilson gig.
Oh, that's funny. You are naming all of them.
This is no Perico Productions. This is no Leonard Velasquez.
And what are those motherfuckers down south? Who are they? Comedy Zone.
Comedy Zone, yeah.
No, Comedy Zone's legit. I shouldn't blast them. Only because the dad got mad at me. The dad got mad at me until he blackballed me. That happens all the time.
It happens to the best of us.
Well, when you don't kiss a lot of ass, you know, you end up getting your ass kicked. So that's the way that works.
That's why you're D. Militant, bro, and not Wooly Wooly.
Right, right. If I was Whoopsie Wooly, I'd have kissed. Oh, my God. I'd have been so big. I'd have been huge.
You would have been huge, bro.
Yeah, but I'd be in my mansion right now alone looking at my old clippings, you know. What happened to my career? Well, you and the rest of them Uncle Toms had to go by the wayside.
So you want to plug anything else besides your books and your list?
What else do I want to plug besides Black and Blue? Speaking engagements.
And you're a personal writer too, right? Because I
yes.
know you put it up. You write stand-up.
Thank you. If any of you comics out there need a personal writer, I do that too. It is very inexpensive for 5 minutes, which means it's doubly inexpensive for 10 minutes.
Can I tell you something? Tell them that story, bro, about Ron White buying that guy's act. And because people say, oh, you're charging too much. No, man, jokes are fucking expensive.
Yeah,
he bought a dude's act. I think it was like a 45-minute act for 50 G's.
Yeah.
He just walked up to it. I love it. Let me have it. And he just paid him cash.
50 G's right there.
Right there. And I was like, damn.
For that 45 minutes.
For the 45 minutes.
That's a good deal. I don't charge anywhere near that. Man.
That's crazy, right?
Wow. But, see, here's the deal. This is why a lot of comics steal, because number one, they ain't got 50 grand to buy your fucking act. But they steal because they're in the position of Ron White where you got to keep coming up with new material. You got to keep coming up with new material. That's why unless you're on tour.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has to come up with new shit. He can't do this tour this year and go back next year with that same shit. They'll throw him off the stage. So he needed a new act. Like when Chris Rock will go out with a notepad and he'll basically poll an audience. Did that joke work? Okay, you like that one, you like that one. And he will build an act using guinea pig audiences, because you can't shoot special after special after special with the same shit. So Ron White, in that particular case, needed a new act. $50,000 is not a lot of money to him. To that other guy, he probably made his year. I mean, $50,000, bam, like that. For 45 minutes, obviously, if you were going to sell your 45, you know, number one, you can write another 45. Number two, that 45 ain't worth $50,000 to me. I have not made, I can't, how long is it going to take that guy to make $50,000 on that act? See, it might have taken him 50 shows, might have taken him 100 shows. This dude's got 50 grand right now in cash. Here, I want your whole act. You got it.
Got it. Sold.
You got it. Sold. Done deal.
Sold, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you need a material written that's nowhere near that price, wow. I got to talk to my accountant. Yeah, I got to raise my prices after hearing that one, man. I knew I was reasonable, but damn, I'm pimping myself. Shit.
I remember I was telling my jokes for $50. A joke.
Yeah.
And they would buy them. So, well, not buy everybody, but...
No, but I mean, if it's a good joke, people will pay for it. But I sell mine by the block of time. And I've had people come back and they will repeat because I write real quick. But yeah, I have to reassess that after hearing that story. And then what else? Oh, I do speaking engagements. Let me point that out. Anybody out there, whether you're a college, university, cultural organization, museum, library, whoever, I do speaking engagements on comedy. I talk about black comedy. I talk about female comedy. I talk about comedy in general. I show clips from my film, and then we do Q&A, and I give you a real live comedy show. So you can hire me for that, too. I'm a gun for hire.
What's up, fool? And to add Rodrigo Torres.
It's chilling, man. Happy holidays.
Yeah, man, you might have to help Rodrigo write a fucking best man speech, bro.
Oh, you're going to be a best man?
Yeah, man.
Wow,
man.
Who's getting married?
Me.
This fool.
Oh, I know you said fiancé, yeah. But you know, that gets thrown around so loosely. How long has she been your fiancé? I mean, 5 years. You know, another yeah. Five, we're going to do it. You know, so I didn't know. When's
two,
the date?
2 years. I think 13? It's like, wow, almost 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah.
Not to you. Rodrigo looking at me like, thank you.
I got to write wedding vows. Help me out now.
Congrats, man.
Thanks,
so
man.
Before the year's up.
Yeah.
Good shit. Good
first
shit.
First time getting married. Any advice?
How old are you? And I will give you the advice. How old are you?
I'm 40-something.
Oh, no. This is the perfect time for you.
I'm fine, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No. For people who get married in their 20s.
It's tough, huh?
It is tough because you haven't got everything out of your system and you don't really know you well enough.
How do you know I have it now? Just kidding.
Well, you're in your 40s. Good luck yeah. If you have it.
I know, right?
and she's sitting right there. I'm not going to fuck your shit up now. You know, that's not my job.
I know. I'm going to be like...
You'll have plenty of opportunities to do that on your own. No, but the trick of marriage is knowing who you are, even more than the other person, because then you know what you like and what you don't like, what you tolerate and what you
want.
So
you were married young?
I got married at 28. So that's not really young, but since I'm immature, it was. So I have the mentality of a 12-year-old. Yeah, that's pretty young. And I was in that marriage for 20 years. Damn, I'm... giving up my age. But, okay, I'm 67. All right.
No, you're not.
I know.
Good.
No, this is what you always say. You always say old. When you hit a certain age of being kind of old, always say older. That way motherfuckers can say, well, you don't look that old. Well, okay, good. So if I say 67, you don't look a day past 49. Thank you.
Okay. You look good. What's up, people? Okay, December, I'll be at Honolulu. December 19th at the Hawaiian Bryans, Reno, Nevada. December 26th to 31st, New Year's Eve weekend at the Pioneer Underground. Same place, Reno, Nevada. January, San Diego, El Paso, Texas, Tampa, Florida, Ontario, California. What's up, fool? D-Militan, thank you very much for being a great, awesome guest.
Thanks for having me.
Can I plug a little gig real quick?
Yeah.
Long Beach Laugh Factory, December 21st. I'll be there.
Oh, shit. They booked you. Oh, shit. December 21st. Go check out Rodrigo Torres at the Long Beach Laugh Factory.
Yeah, man.
Your Twitter, bro. You got a Twitter?
Yes. I am D_Militant.
D_Militant.
Right.
And I am Felipe. Funny Felipe. Rodrigo.
Rodrigo Torres Jr.
You have an Instagram?
I don't do Instagram.
Well, we're going to put a photo of all your stuff on the webpage.
I just want to make sure.
Because I'm not attractive enough yet.
When Juan Dexter's going to get an Instagram. Put all those old hoes on.
Juan Dexter, he's a funny comedian. He was one of the first guys to come up with Ebonics.
That's true.
He used to come up with placards on stage and say Cutler. And it was spelled C-U-T-L-A. Cutler. Yo, man, I'm going to Wild Coyote. Can I borrow Cutler dollars?
Right. He used to do all that. And them, A-N-D-E-M. I'm going to see Mama and them.
He go, and then he'll have feces, F-E-C-E-S. Yo, man, close the door, man. My feces code.
Right.
Both of them.
No, he'll have Wamba. And he goes, man, you just take my money? Man, Wambas do something like that.
Yes, Juan Dexter was hilarious.
Hell yeah.
Dog. So what's up, fool? Thank you. A big shout out to D. Militant for being a great guest on the show.
Hell
people.
Yeah.
Buy all his stuff. Get his books. Get the CD. We're going to put it on the webpage. You can check it out and see how it looks. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to the podcast. Write a good review, all right, people? And we're still doing the All Things Comedy Studio, so go to the All Things Comedy Network and download the sticker. Buy the sticker. You can't download a fucking sticker. All right, man. And go to tubestart.com and join the Kickstarter, people. What's up, fool? Shout out to this guy over here. All right, people. Thank you very much. Mikey.
Mike.
Time.
Happy holidays.